Father Hardin gives two conferences on this tape. The subject of the first conference is how to live in the presence of God. And the second conference is entitled A Sinful Past and the Prospects of Holiness. Father Hardin.
How to live in the presence of God. In the previous section, also in section 3, we talked about the practice of constant prayer. This is a little different. The stress here is on the how. How to live in the presence of God. In order to make sense of this, we must immediately distinguish, and the English language is not easy, doesn't help much, but theologically it's of the essence. The word presence may refer to our presence to God or to His presence to us. Now we don't have to be concerned about how to live in the presence of God, that is, of our presence to God. We don't have to worry about Him. That He will have us off His mind or ignore us. He better not. The whole problem is His presence to us. This means, in terms of development, growth in one's faith in divine providence. I'm not sure now which came first, my stress on divine providence, which I've been doing over the years in teaching theology, or my coming to know the daughters of St. Mary of Providence. Because they coincided. I came back from my studies in Rome in 1951, which is when I first met the community where I am. All I know is there's a close relationship between how to live in the presence of God and growing in one's faith in the providence of God. What then are we talking about? We are talking about that aspect of our faith which identifies God's being present, and not just present in some vague, ambiguous sense, but God being present to us in what He's doing for us. So my general statement, and then I think we'll have to break. God is present in every event of our lives. I've underlined the word every in my notes. God is present in every event of our lives. The pleasant and the painful. The planned and the unplanned. The material and the spiritual. In the persons and the occurrences. In everything outside of us, in everything inside of us. Every thought, every feeling, every breath of air, every sip of water, every bite of food, every person is an act of God's providence acting in our favor. Britannia. It's 1:45 by my clock.
Following is a continuance of the same conference by Father John Hardin at the next session.
We might begin by renoting, as I believe we mentioned the last time, that we are talking about God's objective presence and the need for fostering our subjective response to that presence. We begin, therefore, by observing that we are always present to God. Why? Because He is always working in our favor, beginning with the most important favor we have, namely, our existence. But while God is always working in our favor, from the moment we came into existence, on into the far reaches of eternity, we are not always aware of His working in our favor, and therefore need always to strengthen and deepen our conviction of that presence and acting accordingly. I found it useful to distinguish two words, faith and devotion. The objective fact of faith is that God existed long before we did, that we exist only because He wants us to exist. The devotion, the piety, is what we do about it. It is the mental realization and the volitional response. I might almost say that the whole of our Christian life is summed up in struggling to realize with our minds and acting with our wills on the facts of faith. The facts are there, but we, as we sadly know, can be quite blind to those facts and very weak in responding even to what we know to be true. What are some synonyms for this living in the presence of God? Call it recollection. Call it virtual prayer. Call it habitual prayer. Call it constant prayer. The term that I have found most useful, and it appears in some very fine spiritual masters, is prayer of the heart. Oratio cordis, prayer of the heart. Let me first define the term and then go on to explain, both so we might better appreciate it and might put it to better use in the lives of those who come under our care. Living in the presence of God is the constant disposition of will, ready to do God's will at no matter what cost. So living in the presence of God is the constant disposition of will, ready to do God's will at no matter what cost. Let's briefly explain the definition and then go on to the how, which is the main purpose of these early Saturday morning, what shall we call them, conferences. Not just the what, but the how. Notice, it is a disposition of will. It implies a certain awareness with the mind. But in essence, it is the will that is active. and it's a disposition, which doesn't mean that the will is always actually deliberating or making decisions here and decisions there, as though you've got to be making these choices all day long. It is rather an attitude, a state, if wish, of the human will, which is constant, whose quality is a readiness to do God's will. And not merely that readiness, but even at whatever cost to myself. Against that background, we now ask ourselves, how should we cultivate this disposition and help others to cultivate the same? First, by reflection on the teaching of the New Testament. There are other similar passages, but especially three, occurring both in the teachings of Christ and in the letters of St. Paul. They are, pray always, and again, whatever you do, whether we eat or drink or whatever, do it all for the glory of God. And we are told to pray without ceasing. So first, to study the biblical revelation, which is very clear and very insistent. Second, to cultivate this disposition of responding to God's will, and thus praying always, because we essentially pray not with the mind, but with the will, even as we serve God, essentially with the will and not with the mind, even as we shall be saved, mainly because our wills have cooperated with the will of God. Second, we must be convinced it is possible. So the second recommendation I make is, if the first is by reflection on the New Testament teaching, the second is by conviction that such living in the presence of God is indeed possible. Thirdly, by conviction that it is necessary. Surely it is necessary for sanctity. Now, of course, this readiness to do God's will can be more or less elevated, depending on how sublime a level God's will may be demanding effort or sacrifice from my will. But we are not here distinguishing what God asks, say, of any 2,000 people. They pray as constantly and they are living as constantly in the presence of God as their wills are ready to do His will. So by conviction that it is necessary. Because, quite frankly, unless, surely in the religious life, a person develops this capacity for being ready to do God's will always, there is no question of progress in sanctity. This is almost a description of growth in holiness, a growth in this readiness of disposition. In fact, as I talk about it, I say to myself, why repeat the obvious? What may be less obvious is the vocabulary. People may have read so many writings by or about a Teresa of Avila, Catherine of Siena, John of the Cross, that this living in the presence of God may take on some mystical connotations. I read it in Teresa's autobiography. So I'm just trying to get behind, you might say, the stage scenery. It's all very prosaic. so prosaic that some people, and I think this is one reason why perhaps more people don't recognize this more clearly, because it is so terribly demanding. And I'd much rather be a mystic than, well, always be ready to do God's will. What folly, as though any mystic ever became, what shall I say, mysticized. That's God's work. If he wants to make a mystic out of us, Lord, thy will be done. And by that time, I must have done his will. The hard grudging. What do they call those that our mothers perhaps used to scrub? I know my mother did. What was that
washboard
called? Washboard. See? This is what I call washboard mysticism. The hard work which you expend, then God may graduate you to an electric washer, and it'll be done for you. This is not in my notes. I just thought I'd mention this. Then, by resolving to put it into practice, people must be convinced. No progress. This is a universal negative, the hardest thing to affirm with security. I can affirm this with perfect security. There is no progress in holiness without growing in this presence of God. Meaning, by growing in my readiness of disposition, that my will does his will. Ready to do it. Always. How to practice. I have 7 recommendations. First, learn what is God's will for me as a Christian. And this is one thing I suggest looking for in prospective candidates. To what extent have they been doing God's will according to their then state of life? And whatever else we don't find, be sure to find some evidence of this. Otherwise, after 3 years or 13 years, a person would either leave you or should have left you, or you might have to dismiss them. Because the essence of religious life is not something very different from living a Christian life, except the demands are higher. That's all. Of course, that's plenty. But a person must know something about the demands of God on that person's life already prior to entering the religious state. There must be some awareness of what this language is all about. So, learn what is God's will for me as a Christian. Know the will of God for all believers. And that really is quite demanding. Second, learn what is God's will for me as a religious. And that, I submit, in large measure, is what training and formation in religious life is mainly all about. Learn to know what is God's will, and then, of course, carry it into effect. But here to learn, second step, what does God expect of religious in general, and of this religious in particular? Third, daily examine how well I have done God's will. That should be done from the very beginning. Examination of conscience, in fact, I recommend this long before a person enters the religious state. How well have I done God's will during the day or half day that has passed? I had a very talkative passenger next to me on the plane. After he drank his fourth glass of not orange juice. He paid $2 for each glass. He was so communicative. And while we talked for a few minutes, he told me all about himself. He was ready to tell me more, but I said, look, I got work to do. I got some prayers to get in. Oh, pardon me, Father. And then he started talking again. I figured the only thing that will stop it is for me to close my eyes and seem to go to sleep. If the Lord on the way to Emmaus could seem not to know what had happened, I thought I could, for a good cause, pretend. And I spent a delightful half an hour making a fine examination of conscience. Eyes closed. No danger of falling asleep. So, find out where I have failed in doing God's will, and especially, may I recommend this, why I failed. There is no more important part to the examination of conscience than why. Then, how to improve. There are three parts to every exam: where I have failed, why I failed, and how am I to improve, so as not to fail, or fail as much, or as deeply as I did the last time. Fourth, try to combine every choice in the day with a short prayer. That's worth a cool $1 million. Never use the will before you've united with God. You have united it with God in prayer. And you're not wasting time. Agreed? There's no more valuable split second. It means getting into the habit of combining every rational choice, maybe just momentary, with a short prayer. Maybe the holy name, maybe all for you, maybe Jesus help me, whatever. Fifth, plan my life. I have somewhere an hour's lecture on orderliness in the spiritual life. But I plan what I'm going to do and, of course, how I'm going to do it. One of the remarkable and sad features of so many people's religious life is they know you can't run a grocery store or anything without planning. Did I tell you the last time we were a half an hour late coming into O'Hare because somebody had failed to put in ice into the ice machine on the plane? And of course, you can't fly people from New York to Chicago without serving ice with their drinks. It took them exactly 32 minutes for an ice truck to come speeding up finally after almost a half an hour waiting with a big bag of ice. Dashed with the ice man jumped off and the plane started. Every successful business is planned. This is the business of sanctification. It's got to be planned too. Orderliness. I would say be patient with all other kinds of disorder. Try not to be patient and make clear to the people how important it is to be orderly, tidy, whatever figures of speech you wish to use in their spiritual lives. You pray at a certain time, you do things in a certain way, there's a routine, there's a regularity. I've read enough on the subject. of why some people live longer than others. The main reason is because God wants some people to live longer, and that settles it. But humanly speaking, those live longest who live a more regular life. Sixth, combine this orderliness with alertness to God. Because our orderliness is to correspond to the supernatural order of God. Not everyone who seems to be orderly is. Not everyone who seems to be efficient is. Not everyone's life that seems to be planned or programmed really is. It is not planned for plan's sake or order for order's sake. It is plan and order for God's sake. Order is God's first law. And a good definition of sin is deliberate disorder. So to combine my orderliness with alertness to God's will, speak to Him, ask Him, talk with Him, share with Him, keep nothing to yourself, let there be no secrets between you and God. First of all, it's so silly, because God knows already. But the beauty is, and the power is, that when you begin, maybe we think we do the obvious things. But He wants to know what we are thinking, not because He doesn't know it, but He wants us to share with Him and to see Him in everything. The word is in everything.
Please turn over to side B and push the play button immediately without rewinding the tape.